So hey guys, welcome back to Accelerated Real Estate Investor. Hey, it's Josh, and today I have an awesome interview for you, a special treat. My guest's name is Dave Foster. Dave can be found at the1031investor.com. Dave is a real estate investor, but he's also what's known as a qualified intermediary. And Dave believes that real estate is the investment of the future. Dave has over 20 years of experience working at multiple phases of real estate investing, including large-scale development, single-family homes, and vacation rentals, which has given him a keen eye for opportunity and a clear vision on reducing the impact of taxes. He is a degreed accountant with a master's in management, and he is a regional director for the Exchange Resource Group, which has its own educational website, again, at the1031investor.com. Dave has worked with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of clients to execute 1031 exchanges and reduce and defer taxes. In this interview, Dave and I spend a lot of time actually specifically talking through my $20 million case study and how we would handle a 1031 exchange on a $20 million deal that I personally own. Number two, Dave talks about his recent experience of raising his four boys on his 53-foot sailboat and why, if you have an opportunity, you should do it now. And also, number three, we're going to talk about Dave's strategy of defer, and die. It's an amazing interview. I think you're really going to love it on Accelerated Real Estate Investor with Dave Foster. Here we go.
Welcome to the Accelerated Investor Podcast with Josh Cantwell. If you're looking to retire early with forever passive income, you're in the right place. This podcast is the go-to destination for real estate investors, both active and passive, and multifamily apartment investors, both new, intermediate, and advanced. Now, sit back, listen, learn, and accelerate your business, your life, and your investing with the Accelerated Investor Podcast.
So hey guys, welcome back. And I'm really excited to have my newest guest on Accelerated Real Estate Investor. His name is Dave Foster. Dave, thanks so much for carving out some time and thanks for joining the show.
Awesome. It's great to be here. I'm glad you said newest and not oldest.
Yeah, new.
I qualify for both. I don't know.
It's good to be young. It's good to be new. Fantastic stuff, Dave. So listen, let's jump in and talk about some current events. Like, help my audience understand something that you're working on right now that you're excited about. Like, what are you literally doing like tomorrow or next week? A deal that you're working on or something that kind of gets you going?
God, well, I was going to say, when you talk about adrenaline rushes, what gets me up? It's trying to get two high schoolers through school.
Oh, yeah?
And stay alive. That's number one.
I got some high school. My oldest daughter's in seventh grade, so it's coming up for me very soon.
Years. They become insane until they're about 19.
Nice.
So get ready. It's coming. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of, one thing that I'm doing right now, it's a lot of fun, is I'm right in the, about two-thirds of the way done with a 200-home subdivision on the investment side that we've done from ground to construction.
Nice.
And we've got about 100 homes out of the way and 80 more to go. So that's keeping me out of some trouble.
Nice.
And then just working on finalizing my book on 1031 exchanges, which I think we're going to talk a little bit about here today.
Yes.
And helping investors. It's a crazy time.
It is a crazy time.
A great time to be an investor.
It is a wild time to be an investor. I think it's fun. I think now is great. I think there's capital is abundant. There's a lot of trades happening, a lot of transactions happening. Some uncertainty in the market for sure with the new administration and some tax laws that could be changing, obviously, around the 1031 exchange, which we'll talk about today. But yeah, I think it's a great time to be an entrepreneur, right? It's a great time. The world is very pro-entrepreneur. A lot of commercials, a lot of courses, seminars, all different kinds of things. A lot of people taking kind of the bull by the horns and doing their own thing. Even a lot of my own team, my own staff, Ramey, my podcast producer, some of my marketing team, they've got a lot of their own side hustles going on, and everybody seems to have the entrepreneurial bug. So I know you've been working with entrepreneurs for years. You've done a lot of development. You've done a lot of single family investments. And I know you're working on a lot of 1031 exchange. So tell me about the book that's coming out. When do we expect the book to come out? And it's all around the 1031 exchange concept. So tell us about the book. And for people that don't know what a 1031 is, why don't you just jump into the basics of 1031 exchanges? Go ahead.
Got it. Yeah. So the 1031 exchange is basically just a process that allows you to sell investment property and replace that with new investment property of any type in any location. And in so doing, not pay the tax that would be due on the capital gain or the depreciation recapture. And instead, you use that indefinitely deferred tax to purchase the new real estate. So in essence, what you're doing is compounding your profits because you invest the tax, you make money on the tax, then you make more money, you do another 1031, and you just keep it rolling forward. At the end of the day, a significant chunk of your net worth has been built up with deferred tax that was owed the government.
Yeah.
Now, that's what the 1031 exchange does. It's been around forever and a day. It's been user-friendly for about the last 25 years. And what I like to do, because I live in the world of strategy, this is a process that I discovered for myself and started using over 20 years ago. And in the, through that time, I am most happy when I'm working with investors, helping them to strategically use this process. So the book is a little bit about the rules, which everybody knows and can learn and follow on YouTube. But it's more about how can you strategically and creatively develop your portfolio through different actions throughout the life cycle of you as a real estate investor.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to focus, including case studies from actual clients. And well, you know how it goes. It's like a builder that says there's 14 days in every month. I think we're expecting this out any month.
Yeah.
It's in right now.
Got it. Love it. Yeah. We'll make sure we talk about at the end here of, you know, there's a little bit of a threat to the 1031 exchange and some of the tax laws with the new administration. And maybe get your insight on what that might look like down the road if there's any change. But let's not go there because that's all speculation. Let's not go there right now. Let's talk maybe about the end. So, Dave, let's use some of my portfolio as an example. Okay. So I just bought this 220 unit. Purchase price is $11.65 million. We did it through an entity drop, through a MEPA, a membership interest purchase agreement. We bought the LLC, which included the real estate. Talked to our accountants and CPAs before we bought it, and they assured us that we'd be able to restart the depreciation schedule and kind of start from ground zero. So we're going to do that. And purchase price 11.65. We're going to put about 1.4 into it with soft costs, et cetera. We're going to be in for about 13 and a half. We're going to force the appreciation, going to be worth about 18 million, 18 and a half million, about 3 years from now when we're done with all of our capital improvements, putting on new roofs, turning the units, adding a dog park, adding in some amenities, adding a playground, striping the driveway, et cetera, et cetera. Then we anticipate that there's going to be additional growth, of course, right? So we're going to refinance roughly 3 years from now, return all the investors' equity, pay off the bank loan and move into permanent financing. Or we can refi. The financing that we got allows us to convert the loan into a permanent loan with a 25-year AM schedule. So let's assume under that scenario, let's say it's 10 years from now. Right now I'm in my mid-40s, then I'm in my mid-50s. Let's say I want to sell the building and I've got this decision to make, right? I can either sell the building, take the cash, go spend it on whatever I want, pay a lot of tax, or I can 1031 it. So walk the audience through and walk me through some of the questions that you'd ask me, some of the strategy that you would be walking me through, let's say 10 years from now, assuming the tax laws stay the same. What are some of the things that you'd be asking your clients? If I was your client or one of our some of our audience was your client, how do we think through this process to make the best decision?
Sure. Well, first of all, one of the things I'll know when you're going to sell it, because I'll be one of your tenants. As soon as you said dog park, I'm there.
All right. Sounds good.
I live in St. Petersburg, which is the home of brew pubs and border collies. And we foster rescue dogs.
So oh, great. Nice.
Near and dear to my heart.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So what's happening is right now, and my gosh, Josh, you made me tired just listening to you the first 5 minutes we were talking.
Yeah.
You got it burning at both ends.
Yeah.
You're obviously right in the middle of an incredibly active phase in your real estate investing. It's acquisition time. Ken, like you said, capital's cheap. Projects are out there. You've got energy. It's time to go. Now, in this property, and boy, there's some really interesting components in here that we can look at. Because 10 years from now, are you going to have the same energy? So that's going to be one of the questions. Is it time to look at a different type of investment? Right now, you're doing a lot with forced appreciation. Mm-hmm. And that takes a toll in building it up, the energy you've got to expend, monitoring those kind of things. Maybe it's time to start in 10 years, moving into a more passive type of role.
Sure.
But this property, you've depreciated out what you want. It's time to sell. The neighbor demographics are changing. For whatever reason, it's time. So do you want to go back into more multifamily? I mean, I think we all sense that right now, multifamily has been on a huge run. Mm-hmm. And I got to think you're starting to find it a little more difficult to pull these projects out of the weeds, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. So at some point in time, you're going to be able to sell multifamily at the peak. And maybe there's a different sector, like commercial, land development, the whole single family portfolios.
Sure.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Self-storage, mobile home parks, you name it.
Yep, exactly. Yes. Yeah, I saw that you had Paul Moore on not too awful long ago. And speaking of that, so the 1031 allows you to go from any type of investment real estate to any other type. So it's all about finding what I call holes in the market. Where are the places where there's an inefficiency, where I can sell my product high and go buy this other product low that meets my needs, whether it's income, whether it's a certain load of management or that kind of thing. So that's one of the questions that I would really start with on these people. Now, in your situation, you know, let's say that 10 years from now was the 18 million. A refinance is a beautiful tool because the refinance is not a taxable event. Now, it doesn't affect the requirements for your reinvestment on the 1031. If you sell your property for $18 million, then you must replace that, if you want to deferral tax, with at least $18 million of new real estate.
Okay.
But it doesn't have to be just one. So maybe there's a couple value adds out there. And you sell the one to go buy two cheaper ones. And then what are you going to do? Rinse and repeat. And keep doing that and diversifying out until you wake up one day and you're tired. You go, what the heck?
Yeah.
It's because you got so many of these things. So then you start to sell two or three of them and combine them into one much larger asset, maybe an office tower or a large big box strip center or mall of some sort. Sky's the limit. But you can increase the number through diversification, you can decrease the number and you can move into any other sector. And for you, the refinance gives you the cash to accelerate that process. So you could take the refinance cash and, like you said, repay your investor's principal or take it and go buy the next project.
Yeah.
When you sell, I don't know, you probably end up with, you sell for 18, you may have $13 million in debt. So you come out of that with $5 million in cash. You got $5 million in cash to go buy $18 million in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff you can find everywhere for that.
Are you ready to automate and explode your real estate investing? We're searching for extremely motivated individuals who are sick and tired of wasting time and want to finally see real results from their real estate investing business. We're searching for investors looking to get to the next level and become a bigger, better version of themselves while being a more successful real estate investing entrepreneur. Apply for mentoring and coaching at joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast. That's joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast.
So the mechanics of the numbers, so I'm sort of a numbers geek, right? Like my like math was my favorite, you know, subject in school, and math just flies out the top of my head. So if I'm in for 13.5, a little bit of principal pay down, let's say, with the debt reduction, I'm all in for 12, but my basis with all my expenses is 13.5. And I've done some accelerated depreciation over this, you know, 10-year period. So maybe my loan value, let's say 10 years from now, let's say my loan amount is now $7 million. I sell the real estate for $20 million. So I have $13 million in proceeds. And my depreciation schedule through my accelerated depreciation, regular depreciation schedule has reduced my basis down also to, let's say, $7 million. Okay. So easy numbers, $7 million of basis, $7 million in a loan. Value of the real estate's 20, sell it, $1 million of closing costs. So I'm at 19 of proceeds minus the $7 million. So I'm walking away with $12 million in cash, and my sale number was $20 million. What are my requirements? Like, how much of that do I have to put into the next deal? So, because the last deal I just bought, I bought an 80 unit about 6 months ago. And I remember seeing that the seller of that deal, his name was Ron. Ron did a 1031 exchange, and his proceeds, that was a smaller deal. So I think Ron's dollars when he walked away was like 600 grand, all went into a 1031 exchange account for him to reinvest in the next deal. So help me understand the mechanics of that. Like, I'm selling for 20, my basis is only 7, and I would have a taxable event of $13 million. That $13 million of now proceeds, or $12 million of proceeds after my closing costs, all of that has to go into the next deal. I have to roll it all into the next deal. True or false?
Right. So if you didn't do the 1031 exchange, you're looking at that $13 million in gain, which part of it's capital gain, part of it's depreciation, recapture. I mean, ballpark that thing at 1.62 million in tax.
In tax. Got it.
I mean, okay, right? Alarm bells start going off. I got to give up 2 million. When you do a 1031 exchange, the key word there in the IRS's eyes is exchange. Mm-hmm. They are expecting you to carry forward your equity and your basis. And the forms that you fill out all speak to that mm-hmm. at the end of the tax year. So the IRS doesn't care how much your gain is, only that you're carrying it all forward.
Okay.
So what they say that makes the requirements pretty easy to understand is that you must do two things if you want to defer all tax. The first one is purchase at least as much as your net sale.
Okay.
Now, that's not the $20 million. That's going to be the 19 whatever.
Okay.
Say it's 19. So you got to purchase $19 million. Second part, you must use all of the cash proceeds in the next purchase or purchases.
Okay.
So you generated $12 million in cash selling for $19 million. So you, if you want to defer all tax, you must purchase $19 million using all 12 to do that.
Okay.
Now, what the IRS says is that you can purchase less. You can purchase $18 million. You can take cash out to go pay off investors or do whatever. But when you do that, they choose to interpret that you're taking out profit first.
Okay.
So you want to say taxable. This $1 million is a return of my original basis. There it says, nah, it's profit. And we all know who wins that argument, right?
Yeah, right.
The guys with the nuclear weapons. So is what it is.
Got it.
But that's what we would call a partial exchange.
Got it.
And this actually leads us into an interesting discussion from the syndication point of view, because you mentioned investors. Now, those investors are all with you as members of your LLC.
Correct.
Is that correct?
So let me add one step to the storyline. So the real numbers here of this real deal is, again, 11.65 purchase price. We recruited $3.5 million of limited partner cash. We syndicated the deal. We gave up 18% of the equity. We kept 82% of the equity for us. So me, Glenn, Tyler, my partners, we own 82% of the deal. We gave up 18. And so the step would be, step number one is buy, stabilize. 3 years from now, we'd see the first recapitalization event, the first refi. At that event, we would pay off the bank loan and return all the investors' equity. Because if the valuation is 18 or 19 million, we get a new loan at, let's say, 75%. That new loan is going to be about 14, 15 million. And that's going to allow us to pay off the bank loan and all of the limited partner equity and some refi proceeds to us and to our investors. So we got a new loan on it now, let's say for 14 and a half. We've taken some cash out refi, which is tax-free, which is awesome. We returned all the investors' equity, the 3.6 million, and we paid off the original bank loan. Now we just have one bank, let's say it's Fannie Mae, non-recourse, at 14 and a half. That starts at year three, month 36. But then over the next 7 years, we pay that loan down and we have the depreciation schedule also that's happening to have our basis minus the depreciation schedule. So question becomes now for you is, if we pulled some cash out, what if at, let's say, year eight, we had another recapitalization event and we refied a second time and we pull out more cash tax-free that we go spend, and now the proceeds, instead of being 12 million, maybe is only 4 or 5 million. Okay. How is those refi events impacting the 1031?
They don't change your reinvestment requirement at all. That's still the 19 million.
19 million. I have to buy at least 19 million of real estate.
Cash that you have to buy that with. So it's a simple matter then of taking the lesser amount of cash and taking out more leverage on your replacement.
Okay. So I've got the, let's say, again, I'm all in for 14 and a half. I sell it for 20. We net 19. So we got 4.5 million of proceeds. I've got to invest all those proceeds, 4.5 million, and I've got to buy at least $19 million worth of real estate. And the dollars that I pulled out in the tax-free refi event, the recapitalization number one at year three, recapitalization number two at year eight, let's say at year eight, I don't have to like bring those dollars to closing to buy the new real estate.
Not at all. Not at all. You simply use that property as security to borrow money.
Right.
So it's paid off as part of the sale and you go forward. That's why refis are so powerful.
Yeah.
Because they don't slow down your investing at all. They give you access to the capital for further down payments.
Yeah. I love it. So let's say I do a 1031 exchange, I buy another $19 million worth of real estate, which would be my intention. And let's say I buy another and I want to own or operate it for another 10 years. So that takes me from my mid-50s to my mid-60s. Let's say I've got plenty of energy and I'm still actively investing. Maybe, maybe not. But let's just say I am. And now at 65, another similar event happens. But now, just to use round numbers, I've got assets, again, bought for 19. Now they're worth 30 million, right? And I've got 10 million of equity, and I go now I'm 65 years old, and now I'm slowing down. I just want to hang out, and I don't want to be an active operator anymore. What are my options now to continue to shelter that tax, but to maybe get into some sort of investment where I'm not so active? Can I roll that into a limited partner arrangement where I'm a limited partner? Do I have to still be a general partner? But maybe I just have a property manager that does the management of the building. How would that work when you really want to go from an active operator role, forcing appreciation? Now I want to be a limited partner. I really don't want to do anything but sip my ties on the beach and you know, go for, you know, beach walks with my wife or whatever. How does that work? And is there ever a time, Dave, where all of this tax deferral catches up to me and there's this big balloon payment where I'm going to owe a ton of tax down the road?
Yeah, the tax doesn't go away. That's important to know. But there are what we call the four D's of 1031 investing. You ready?
Yes.
Defer, die.
Defer. Okay. All right. Explain. What do you mean? Defer, and so
as long as you don't sell the property ever, you never pay the tax. As long as any time you sell that property, and do a 1031 exchange, you'll never pay the tax.
So the idea is to die, pass away, give it to my kids, have a step up in basis when I die. And now let's say the property's worth $50 million. I die when I'm 85 years old. And now my kids inherit a $50 million group of buildings and complexes and whatever.
Tax-free.
Tax-free. They get a step up in basis. The new basis now is the value when they inherit it at $50 million. And now all of a sudden the clock turns all the way back to midnight. And there's no tax on all that.
Starts.
On all of that gain, all the 1031. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. I have a family in Greenwich, Connecticut who's on their third generation. Grandpa started it, willed it to his son. His son then started over and built it up. And he passed away not too long ago. And his children. And they have in three generations not paid a penny in capital gains tax.
Wow.
On real estate.
Yeah.
But Josh, be careful.
Okay. Why?
Do not let your children go into any kind of medical field. Because when they figure out the benefit of your death, they may find some ways to accelerate. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if they were to knock me off, then they've got to pay tax. So hopefully they keep the old man around just to avoid paying all the taxes.
There you go. Now, you know, what's really interesting is, look, I wanted to kind of go back to your structure of the first deal, because this is a very key 1031 component, and it affects syndication greatly. In order to do a 1031 exchange, the taxpayer for the old property has to be the taxpayer for the new property.
Like so?
So the taxpayer for your current property is your limited partnership.
Right.
The limited partnership itself is filing the tax returns that report the activity of the property.
Okay.
So in the IRS's eyes, because the property is on the LP tax return, the LP is the taxpayer.
Okay.
Not the members.
Not me, not my LLC. Yeah, got it.
So when you sell that property, it has to be the LP that does the 1031, not the individual members. They have to either go along or you have to buy them out somehow.
Got it. So when people ask me and they say, well, I have a gain on my other property of $500,000, $1 million, whatever, can I 1031 that into your deal? Right? The answer is probably going to be no, because their LLC is whatever, XYZ LLC. And they're now 1031 into this new LLC, which we typically set up a special purpose LLC. Like this deal we bought was 220 units on Chevrolet Boulevard. So we called it 220 Chevy. So 220 Chevy is a new entity that bought those buildings, actually through the membership purchase agreement. But if somebody's looking at 1031 $1 million into there and become a partner, they really can't do it because it's a different taxpayer. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. Because what they'd be buying is a membership interest in an entity that owns real estate. Mm. And they wouldn't be buying actual real estate. So it's changing taxpayers and they're not buying real estate. Now, the answer to Josh, if you can make it work, and at certain times you can if the financing is right, is that if that investor, if you were able to sell to them a tenant in common interest to the property, so that 220 Chevy actually ends up owning, let's say, 90% of that property, mm-hmm. and XYZ LLC owns 10%, then they could 1031 into that tenant in common interest. And when it was sold, then, of course, 220 Chevy can do an exchange on their portion. XYZ LLC can do a 1031 on its portion.
Got it.
But you've got to be very careful that what you actually own is real estate itself.
Right. Right. Got it. So then if we were to sell that building, let's say again, 10 years from now, I'm now in my mid-50s, and I had this 10% partner come in from their 1031 into my deal in a tenant in common arrangement. Now we go sell the real estate and we go buy the next group of buildings. Can they then exit the partnership as long as they roll their 10% into another deal of equal or larger size roll in all their proceeds. You said those are the two requirements, but they could now go do a deal without me, right? They could go do a different deal so long as the taxpayer remains the same. True?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What you guys own at that moment in time is actually two pieces of real estate. Mm-hmm. That happens to be a percentage of a larger piece of real estate.
Right.
You own 90% of it. They own 10% of it. So you do a 1031 in your direction. They do a 1031 wherever they want to go.
Mm, love it. Okay, but the key being buy real estate that's the same price or more, roll in all your proceeds, and make sure the taxpayer remains the same.
Exactly. That's correct.
Got it. Love it. Fantastic. So Dave, help me understand, who is your best client? So with our listeners, we got thousands and thousands and thousands of listeners every week, people that are on the show. Who is somebody that should be reaching out to you? Describe your sort of ideal client and then give us your contact information. Where can they get a hold of you?
Got it. Well, that's kind of the beautiful thing about this is that the 1031 works for anybody who has a piece of property that is either highly appreciated or that has been highly depreciated.
Okay.
And they're ready to sell it and go buy something else for whatever reason, whether they want to change locations, whether they want to change sectors in real estate, whether they want to go from active management to passive management, whether it's time to retire and look at something more passive, or whether it's time to get a vacation rental or maybe a potential retirement home. The 1031 can work in every one of those examples.
That's fantastic.
And that's the beauty of it.
So it could be somebody who's making, you know, just a residential investment. You know, they've got a property that appreciated and depreciated at the same time. Obviously, the market's been good for the last 10 years. So you've got people that held rentals for the last 10 years. Now they're highly appreciated and highly depreciated. But, you know, it might be somebody who's in their mid-40s or early 50s who just, you know, had a good run the last 10 years. It doesn't have to be somebody who's ultra wealthy. And maybe they're walking away with a $700,000 profit. It could be profit plus depreciation adds up to 700 grand. And they're like, wow, I don't want to have to pay tax on all that. I don't want to have to pay, let's say, 150 grand or 200 grand in taxes. I just want to roll it. So you don't have to be one of the ultra wealthy to use this tool.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, the average exchange, the size of an average exchange in America last year was a little over $300,000.
Okay.
That's mom and pop.
Yeah, all day.
That's regular America. You know, and if they're deferring tax on, say, $50,000 or $60,000 in profit, that's a $10,000 or $15,000 gain tax mm-hmm. that they would pay. And if all they do is the 1031 process to put it into new real estate, then that $10,000 in tax goes forward with them to go buy more real estate.
Mm.
And if you make a 10% return on your money, that means that every year, courtesy of the United States government and your silent partner, Uncle Sam. You're making $1,000 a year. That's real money.
Yeah.
Now multiply that times 10, 100, 1,000, and you see it's applicable at whatever size. My favorite client of all time was a little lady in Cape Coral, Florida, who sold a dry lot for like $11,000. It was nothing. And I said, you realize by the time you do a 1031 exchange, you're going to pay me more than you're saving.
Yeah.
You're going to save $300 or $400. And I swear to God, she looked at me and goes, yeah, but Dave, that's my $400.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the attitude of a 1031 investor.
That's fantastic stuff. So I guess the mindset of the 1031 investor also has to be, once I start this process, I really can't ever go back. Like, it's defer, die. And eventually, if you decide to sell without a 1031 down the road, the Uncle Sam's going to come back and take a big, big, big chunk of right. whatever that is. And it could be even more than the proceeds if you do a long enough deferral.
Finance.
Yeah, it could be more. The tax owed could be more than the proceeds of that final sale. And you could be completely upside down. So that's the downside risk, right?
Well, that's exactly right. The one thing that I would counter with that is to always remember, though, that, well, first of all, keep your leverage low enough that you can sustain that mm-hmm. if that's mm-hmm. going to be your plan. But always remember that compound interest and tax deferral go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's forever, every year benefits you. So what's the rule of 72 tell us? That if I make 10% on my investments, they will double in 7.2 years, yeah, right? So what if you held a property using $100,000 in deferred tax for 7.2 years and then sold it without a 1031?
Yeah.
And you made 10% on your investment. Guess what? You made enough money to pay the tax with the money you made on the tax.
Right. Got
it. So even if you only do it for 7 years, it's still worthwhile.
Love it.
Because of what you're going to gain.
That's fantastic. Dave, so as we kind of round, you know, third and head for home here, what are your thoughts about possible changes to the administration, what they're talking about with 1031s? What are some of the, you know, things you're hearing in the background about potential tax change?
Yeah, I love that question because I'm old enough to have been through like 5 or 6 administrations. And let me tell you, Josh, every single president since 1996 has talked about getting away from the 1031 exchange.
Yes.
Every one of them. Only one president has actually done something about it.
Okay.
And it's the one you would never think of.
Trump.
Owned the most real estate of all of them. Trump took away the personal property exception that lets you do 1031s on personal property.
Mm.
We used to do a lot of 1031s on jets, heavy equipment, mining equipment, and that kind of thing. Trump took that away. So I don't see this as so much a red and blue issue. It's just low-hanging fruit for every one of them.
Yeah.
They see a way they think will work. Let's take that away. It'll generate money. Because
Congress has never met a tax. It's probably a lot of pandering. It's probably a lot of talk. It's a lot of vote me in, and I'm going to take this away from the rich. But again, you're talking about mom and pop. $300,000 is your average. These are regular Americans, mom and pop types. These are not the ultra wealthy. Of course, the ultra wealthy use the strategy too. But everybody in Congress is getting rich off of our country. It doesn't matter if you're red or blue. And they all own real estate. So do we really think that they're going to vote for a law that's going to force them to pay a ton of tax and vote for a law where your average American, $300,000 gain, is using this strategy to buy more real estate? It's going to disincentivize the reason to own property. And you know, there's lots of other reasons to own property, but the 1031 is one of the many reasons. And if you disincentivize the market, it's going to destabilize prices. Prices will go down. It's going to impact the overall economy. So it's a massive, massive decision that negatively impacts lots of people. And of course, the lawmakers who probably own tons of real estate in their portfolio. So probably, from my opinion, and again, probably not something that's going to happen on a grand scale. Maybe there's a couple tweaks. Is that your thought too? Maybe there's a tweak to the program,
yeah,
I'm not really concerned
with it right now at all. They're having trouble assigning parking places in Congress without a fight. So I think it's low on the radar screen. Mm. But like you said, it is a huge economic generator. And it increases the velocity of money. There's over, I'd say around 600,000 to 700,000 exchanges that are happening every year.
Wow, okay.
That is increasing the velocity of money. And velocity of money is what keeps inflation at bay. Rather than print more, you make the money that's in circulation work harder. So as Gideon Tucker said, nobody's person, property, or liberty are safe as long as Congress is in session.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm not too awful worried about it.
In my newest real estate investing book, The Flip System, you'll learn the proven secrets and strategies that I've used to be a successful real estate investor. You'll also hear the story of my journey from quitting my job to doing over 2,000 units of apartments. The Flip System is now available for a limited time, and you can grab your free copy at getflipsystem.com/podcast. You'll learn the same proven principles and secrets and investing strategies that I used to quit my job and pursue a life of financial freedom. In this book, I'm sharing exactly how I was able to personally close over 750 profitable real estate deals, make over 400 private lender loans, raise over $30 million, and acquire over 2,000 units of cash-flowing apartments. Get my newest book now for free at getflipsystem.com/podcast. That's getflipsystem.com/podcast.
Dave, let's do this. Let me ask you a couple kind of quick fire questions, your kind of journey, more of some of the things you've learned along your way as an entrepreneur, as a business owner. First question, and you could take a little bit longer to maybe answer this one, but if you were to be able to reach back into time and talk to a younger, former Dave Foster, what is some advice that you give your younger, former self? What's some advice you'd pass back to our audience that they can incorporate into their entrepreneurial journey with real estate or even outside of real estate? What are some things you've learned along the way that you wish you would have done differently, or just some tips, hacks, things that you think that, you know, you wish you had done or our audience should be doing along their process, their journey?
Yeah. Well, you know, as the markets have changed, we've gone so much from a local real estate economy to where now the nation and world are really available to us. So I don't want to beat myself up too bad, but I would tell myself being in Denver in the early 90s, hey, Dave, don't forget there's all kinds of places in the United States where you can take advantage of inefficiencies of the market. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have just invested there and kept my portfolio around me. That's probably one. But far and away, the biggest thing is it would be a reminder. And I would say, hey, Dave, remember, when the opportunity is there, don't wait for tomorrow. Do it now.
Yeah.
We positioned our real estate to sail away into a early retirement, raising our four boys on a 53-foot sailboat.
Yeah.
And we took advantage of the opportunity to do it. It's never going to come again.
Yeah.
But because we took it when it came, it was there. So whether it's a piece of real estate, whether it's a lifestyle or career decision, if you can do it, do it now.
Do it now.
Yeah. You never regret what you do now. You'll always regret what you didn't do.
Yeah, I love that. Dave, let's finish with the final five. Five quick questions. You know, take 10 to 30 seconds to answer these questions. Question number one, what is your favorite way to find real estate deals?
Oh, I love to find what are called cones of investment. I look for where the federal government is putting money, whether it's a military reservation or whether it's universities or whether it's special pork belly products.
Okay.
Where the government invests, the economy will grow.
Fantastic. Number two, what's your favorite place or way to find capital from limited partners or joint venture partners, to partner with on your deals and bring capital to your projects?
You know, I'm kind of a Luddite and a dinosaur. This is going to be a totally unsatisfactory answer.
Okay.
But I don't like to use other people's money. Mm. I didn't like it. I didn't like how it made me feel and the risk I was taking with their money. So I always just look to my own bank accounts. And if it's not there, we don't do it.
Okay. Like it. Question number three, what's the favorite book that you've read recently and why?
Oh man. Can I give you three real quick?
Sure.
Bombs away. First of all, the Proverbs in the Bible, the absolute ultimate business and personal relationship guide you'll ever read. My two favorite business books, though, by the same author, Whatever Happened to Penny Candy and The Clipper Ship Strategy, both by Richard Marbury. The Penny, Whatever Happened to Penny Candy, best primer on inflation you'll ever read.
Oh, nice.
The Clipper Ship Strategy, best primer on how to find those cones of investment by the federal government.
Love it, man. Those are two books I have not heard of.
So I can understand them.
Love it. Dave, favorite place for you to vacation, decompress, and think?
Out of my sailboat.
On the sailboat, of course. Like, right, that's fantastic. And last question, Dave, who's the favorite mentor that you ever had or the person that had the biggest impact on your life?
You know, he probably doesn't even know it to this day. A guy named Mike Sumter was my direct superior. He was an Air Force colonel at the Air Force Academy. And he told me two things that have resonated to this day. Dave, if you've got people under you, day one on your job, pick a body and shoot them. Doesn't matter who. Get rid of one, leave the body on the floor. The rest will get the message. And secondly, he said, when you encounter difficulties, shoot until you're out of bullets and then throw the gun at them.
Fantastic advice. I've never heard those before. Dave Foster, it's been an absolute privilege having you on the show. I'm sure a lot of our audience will want to reach out to learn more about you and your, you know, your strategy, this 1031 exchange, and how they can use you to defer, eliminate, defer taxes. If people want to reach out, where can they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. We have developed an entire portal that is specifically geared towards education. YouTube videos, calculators, articles, and the book's going to be there as well. And it's at the1031investor.com.
Got it. The1031investor.com. Guys, check it out. Thank you so much for joining us today on Accelerated Real Estate Investor.
My pleasure.
Well, hey, I hope you really enjoyed that interview on Accelerated Real Estate Investor with Dave Foster. I had a great time with him walking through our case study, our $20 million case study and how that would work. And I love the very simple mindset of defer taxes, and then die, and then eventually get what's called a step up in basis, which means your kids, your grandkids, whoever inherits your portfolio, whoever inherits your assets, gets a step up in basis, added to new value, which means they pay no tax. And then they can do the same thing. It's a fantastic opportunity. I was also blown away in this interview to hear that the average 1031 exchange was only $300,000. So it's a lot of regular people, average Americana, using this strategy. You don't have to be ultra wealthy. So make sure you use this in your own portfolio. And of course, check out Dave's website at the1031investor.com. If you enjoyed this interview, as always, leave us a 5-star rating and review on any of the podcasting platforms and YouTube. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss another episode of the Accelerated Real Estate Investor. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing this. You know, I'm always so just honored, privileged, and excited to be building this community, working with you. Don't forget to join our private Facebook group for all of our Accelerated Real Estate Investor members. Just go to Facebook, go to the groups, and search Accelerated Real Estate Investor. You can join for free. If you want help building your portfolio, go visit joshcantwellcoaching.com. You can apply for coaching there to work directly with me to help build the lifestyle that you've always wanted. Thanks again for being here today on Accelerated Real Estate Investor, and we'll talk to you on the next episode. We'll see you soon. Take care. Hey, Josh here. And do you want to win a free Accelerated Investor t-shirt? All you have to do is give Accelerated Investor, our podcast, Accelerated Investor, a rating and a review on iTunes. Okay? Do that now. Then send us a screenshot on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. What we're going to do then is every week we're going to pick our favorite rating and review, and we're going to send that person a free t-shirt and maybe, again, some other cool, fun stuff as well from Accelerated Investor. So, again, don't forget to take a screenshot. Leave a rating, review, take a screenshot, send it to us so we know exactly who you are. And then once a week, every week on the podcast, we will announce a new winner. Don't forget to take a screenshot and send it to us so we know exactly who you are. We'll announce a new winner every week.
You were just listening to the Accelerated Investor Podcast with Josh Cantwell. If you enjoyed this episode and learned something new, help us build the AI community by leaving a review and 5-star rating on our iTunes podcast channel. Also, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss another episode. To see passive investing opportunities, visit freelandventures.com/passive. To start your journey toward the lifestyle you've always dreamed of with multifamily apartments, apply for one-on-one coaching with Josh at www.joshcantwellcoaching.com.